The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoic Jew podcast where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Today's reading is from Marcus Aurelius' book, Meditations, Book 4, Paragraph 32. Call to mind, by way of example, the time of Vespasian. You will see everything the same. Men marrying, bringing up children, falling ill, dying, fighting, feasting, trading, farming, flattering, asserting themselves, suspecting, plotting, praying for another's death, murmuring at the present, lusting, heaping up riches, setting their heart on offices and thrones. And now that life of theirs is no more and nowhere. Again pass on to the time of Trajan. Again everything the same. That life too is dead. In like manner, contemplate and behold the rest of the records of times and whole nations, and see how many after their struggles fell in a little while and were resolved into the elements. But most of all, you must run over in mind those whom you yourself have known to be distracted in vain, neglecting to perform what was agreeable to their own nature, to hold fast to this and to be content with this. And here you are bound to remember that the attention paid to each action has its own worth and proportion, only so you will not be dejected if in smaller matters you are occupied no farther than was appropriate. So just brief historical perspective here, which I had to look up because I don't know my Roman history. So Vespasian reigned, was the emperor from the year 69 to 79, and founded a dynasty that lasted for 27 years. Trajan was considered to be one of the so-called five good emperors, of which Aurelius was the last. So Trajan lived from reigned from 98 to 117, and then Aurelius reigned from 161 to 180. So if you want to put those in contemporary terms, this is like Marcus Aurelius telling us in 2021, think about Vespasian, who ruled in the late 1920s and early 1930s, and Trajan, who ruled in the late 1960s and early 1970s. So he's running us through a little thought experiment here, right? Is that we tend to feel that our pursuit and our time period is unique and like special and you know, somehow our struggles and ambitions and goals and actions are more real than the people in the past. And his point obviously is, nope, they're not. It's all human beings doing human stuff and having the same aspirations. And not only that, but they're gone and time moves on, you know, and time forgets. And you got to remember also that like Marcus Aurelius is not just bringing up famous historical figures. He's bringing up people who are in the same league that he is. I mean, these are other emperors of Rome at the height of the power of the Roman Empire. So if we were to do this same experiment, so, you know, we should think of people in our own league, you know, so to speak, or people who are doing the same things as we ourselves are doing. So, for example, I'm a teacher, and it's very easy for me to get caught up in the day-to-day, planning and teaching and grading and all this other stuff. And what Aurelius is suggesting that I do is take a step back, realize, you know, think back to teachers in the 1960s, think back to teachers in the 1920s, in the 1800s, in the 1700s, you know, all the way back. And pretty much it's the same thing. I mean, the particulars have changed, but it's, you know, those teachers had their same, same ambitions and goals and struggles and challenges and the same feelings about their successes and failures that I did. And they're dead and gone and forgotten, most of them. And so what this does is it puts into perspective, like, okay, what am I really doing? And what am I striving for? What is the place of my striving and my stress and my anxiety and my yearning? Like, what place does that have in the grand scheme of things? And what I actually recall here is, because we say this every morning, is I guess you could call it, not strictly speaking, a tefillah, but the tefillah of Le'olam, which I'm going to read the English here because I'll just read all the way in English instead of reading it in Hebrew and translating. Always let a person be God-fearing, privately and publicly acknowledge the truth, speaking the truth within his heart, and arise early and proclaim, Master of all worlds, not on the basis of our righteousness do we cast our supplications before you, but on the basis of your abundant mercy. What are we? What is our life? What is our kindness? What is our righteousness? What is our salvation? What is our strength? What is our might? What can we say before you, Hashem, our God, and the God of our forefathers? Are not all the heroes like nothing before you, the famous as if they had never existed, the wise as if devoid of wisdom, and the understanding as if devoid of intelligence? For most of their deeds are desolate, and the days of their lives are empty before you. The preeminence of man over beast is non-existent, for all is nothingness. Now that's the middle point, right? And that's very Koheles, very in line with what Marcus Aurelius is saying, is that you have all these people who are very accomplished, and they're no longer here, you know, as if there's no superiority of man over beast. But then we switch over and we say, but we are your people, members of your covenant, children of Abraham, your beloved, to whom you took an oath at Mount Moriah, the offspring of Yitzchak, his only son, who was bound atop the altar, the community of Yaakov, your firstborn son, whom because of the love with which you adored him and the son and the joy with which you delighted in him, you named Israel and Yeshurun. Therefore, we are obligated to thank you, praise you, glorify you, bless, sanctify, and offer praise and thanks to your name. We are fortunate. How good is our portion? How pleasant is our lot? And how beautiful our heritage? So, despite everything that was just said before about how everyone is nothing and nothing really, all the accomplishments and successes don't matter, we shift our laser-like focus on the fact that we are the descendants of these avos who did live worthy lives, and that is our portion to carry on their legacy. And that's really, again, like, it's sifting out all of the inane and vain things that we focus on that are just going to die with us, and only focusing on what is actually, like, what actually matters, which is our portion, which is, you know, the way of the avos, which is knowledge of Hashem and chesed, tzedakah, mishpat, kindness, righteousness, and justice. And this actually, this morning I read an article by Rabbi Yehuda Rappaport on the conclusion of Sefer Bereishis. And so in it, he quotes Rav Yosef ibn Kaspi. This is on Bereishis 50:26. So here, the last comment of Rav Yosef ibn Kaspi on Sefer Bereishis, Yehuda's translation. He says, "And Yosef died when he was 110 years old. It is a man's end or destiny to die. And though when he was alive, Yosef gathered grain like the sands of the sea, and Yosef collected all the silver, nothing was left of all his toils. Only his soul remained, which went to Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. And so Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, said, everything that is in your power to do, do." Meaning, the gaining of practical and theoretical wisdom, as he concludes his words and says, "For there is no deed or consideration or knowledge or wisdom in the place where you are heading." Meaning, once you die, then you can't really pursue wisdom anymore. And these are the four kinds of perfection that Aristotle and Plato mention. In summary, the final, and he quotes a pasuk from Koheles. In summary, the final word after all has been heard: fear God, keep His commandments, for this is the whole of man. So, again, this he's really Rav Yosef ibn Kaspi is really pulling the same move on Yosef that Aurelius pulled on these other emperors, meaning Yosef was at the height of power in Egypt and saved the entire nation and all these people. But what's the only thing? He can't take any of that to his grave. And all of that is really just part of his physical body and his physical existence. The only thing that he can really focus on is his soul. Right, is what Ibn Kaspi points out is the gaining of practical and theoretical wisdom. And Aurelius, you know, has that same sort of highlighting of what our life really should be about at the end of his paragraph here. He says "But most of all, you must run over in mind those whom you yourself have known to be distracted in vain, neglecting to perform what was agreeable to their own nature." Meaning, again, that's referring to the Stoic idea that living in line with nature is what constitutes, human perfection or what life is all about. To hold fast to this and to be content with this. And here you are bound to remember that the attention paid to each action has its own worth and proportion, only so you will not be dejected if in smaller matters you are occupied no farther than was appropriate. Meaning that, given the fact that all of these, everything is going to come to an end with your death and going to be forgotten in the sands of time, so just focus on living in line with your nature, or living in accordance with nature in all of the actions and activities and involvements, no matter how big or how small, and let the results of that be your reward, so to speak. So there's probably more here, but just wanted to try to translate the thought experiment that he was proposing into more actionable and Torah terms. That's it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today and would like to support my production of even more Torah content, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweis. Link is in the description. Thank you to my listeners for listening, and thank you to my patrons for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone. And I actually have to add here, speaking of things always being the same, I had to record this episode a bunch of times because I got interrupted by horns honking outside, okay, because we're in New York. And I thought to myself as I was reading it, you know, on the one hand, you know, there's not been another generation where someone is making a WhatsApp recording for a podcast and there are horns honking, you know, this is a new phenomenon. But on the other hand, I'm sure that, you know, teachers in the past when they were trying to give shiur were interrupted by loud noises outside of their window also. So it's not really special. So I don't know. I was thinking about that as I went.